America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great day it is. It is the day when we honor our veterans. It is November 11th, also known as Armistice Day around the world, because the war to end all wars, the Great War, World War I, 1914 through 1918, it ended today. And they made a great deal about the fact that it ended on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. Just in time, they hope to save civilization. And of course, the history meant that there were been many more wars since World War I. And we have literally millions of American veterans who risked their lives and gave their all to serve their country. So today we honor veterans by shutting down schools in Seattle and Bellevue. And not today. Today is a normal holiday. It's a federal holiday. The mail doesn't come. Schools in most places aren't open. But what about tomorrow? Why is tomorrow a day off in Seattle and Bellevue schools? Parents just got the letters today. We will get to that. It seems to me an incredibly stupid move, but this has been the decision of the education authorities and public schools. We will get to that. We'll also get to some of the other problems with public schools, not just the way they are teaching about America, even about World War I, which the end of which is celebrated today. But we will also talk about how in the face of a flurry of D's and F's coming everywhere, there's a decision by one of the nation's leading school districts to basically drop conventional grading. We will be talking about some of the issues involving veterans, particularly homeless vets. Are veterans getting a fair deal? And what can be done about it, and what should be done about it? We'll be speaking to Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, who is a former national security advisor to Vice President Pence, about what can be done to actually improve the situation for American vets. We always talk about homeless vets. Do you know that President Obama proclaimed right before the end of his two terms that basically the problem of homeless vets had been solved? Not so fast. There's a powerful piece by a former vet who served 4 years with some distinction in the military and has spent years on the streets. Why? What are we doing wrong? And speaking about spending time on the streets, we'll be speaking to an award-winning reporter who has gone around the country to take a look at some of the human cost on the streets and elsewhere of people who are wounded by drugs. The book is called The Least of Us, and it's by Sam Quinones. We will get to that. And we'll also be speaking about what needs to be done to make sure that we don't send veterans, we don't send our military into wars that we won't win anymore. And what can you do to provide better security, stronger security, and that actually might have a connection with the same idea that we need for people who are going into battle a little bit more of what's called a Viking heart. There's a book about that by Arthur Herman, who actually is also proposing a new means of defense for the United States against some of the risks of cybersecurity and some of the risks specifically of Russia and China. We will be getting to that too. What a busy day on the Medved Show. Okay, first up, why did they decide at the last minute to close the schools tomorrow? Today, as I mentioned, it's a federal holiday, but this has made national news now, and Seattle and Bellevue don't normally make national news. But right now, they are reporting in The Hill, national publication, public schools in the Puget Sound area are canceling classes on Friday. due to staffing shortages. What does this mean? It means that under the policies negotiated by the teachers' unions and the various school districts, what happens is school employees can request personal days off. And what they're doing is they had over 600 teachers who had requested personal days off. Why? Because they wanted a four-day weekend. Because you have Veterans Day on a Thursday, you get that day off. And then if you get Friday off too, now this means that parents and kids who were unable to plan for a four-day weekend, they don't get any benefit from it. For lots of parents, it's a huge inconvenience. Seattle officials stated that staff is experiencing fatigue after they were out of the classroom for so long due to the pandemic, and that the four-day weekend may offer physical, mental, and emotional restoration. Really? Really? We have a four-day weekend coming up for most school districts, don't we, on Thanksgiving? There are lots of people who have that coming up. Seattle Public Schools sent an email to parents yesterday saying there was an unusually large number of SPS staff taking leave on Friday. They said last week that more than 600 teachers had requested leave the day after Veterans Day, which is a school holiday. There is this report from King 5 TV News in Seattle on this situation that has left so many parents scrambling for child care and other arrangements because of the lateness of the announcement. Listen.
Two school districts have suddenly announced they will not have class this Friday. First, Seattle Public Schools, and now Bellevue, both blaming cancellations on staffing shortages.
With only 3 days' notice, it's sending parents scrambling for daycare options. We talked to parents who say this is not going to affect them too much, while other parents say this is a growing problem. Parents got an email that says the district will need to close this Friday because of what they call an unusually large number of staff taking leave. Keep in mind, Thursday is Veterans Day, which is a day off for SPS. SPS says they don't have enough staff to open schools on Friday with the necessary environment for high-quality learning. Staffing shortages in school districts have been a burden from the get-go as classes return to in-person amid a pandemic. So SPS says a number of leave requests this Friday is, in their words, indicative of the fatigue our staff and students are experiencing while going back to the classroom. SPS says at least 600 educators have requested substitutes since last week, and right now there is a shortage of substitute teachers within the district.
Okay, is this a good thing? Is this an appropriate thing? Look, I love teachers. I am a member of a family full of teachers. My mother and my father and our two daughters are both full-time teachers. Teachers now, and you can love teachers, but not really like the impact of the teachers' unions, which really is the problem here, it seems to me. They have a statement that they put out from the school district. They said that, please remember that personal days are for very limited purposes and are not to be used as an additional holiday or vacation day, the email reads. We encourage you to please prioritize being in your school on November 12th. Our current major shortage of staff creates gaps in service and instruction. This is something they sent out to the teachers before they were flooded with all these requests for personal days. And here's the deal. They're not getting a free day. They're going to have to make it up later in the term, which louses up your curriculum, which louses up parents' schedules, and basically promotes that idea that it's really the teachers and the staff who are in charge of schools, not the kids or the kids' parents or the community. And being in charge of schools, that also leads to when grades get terrible, then what do? Do you improve the instruction or change the grading system? We'll get to that and more coming up on the MedVed Show. On the Michael Medved Show, one of the things that we haven't heard yet, but I'm sure that we will, is that the idea of adjourning school, announcing at the last moment, 2 days before it happens, that there's going to be no school in the Puget Sound area and the two largest school districts in Bellevue and in Seattle. There won't be any school on Friday because of staffing shortages, because too many teachers phoned in with personal days saying they were stressed out. And what I think is extraordinary here is a statement from the union saying they needed a four-day weekend to repair mental and emotional and physical exhaustion. And to here it is. It says Seattle officials stated that staff is experiencing fatigue after they were out of the classroom for so long. Now, wouldn't you think that being out of the classroom, I mean, I know it can be very hateful for teachers. I know that our daughter who teaches high school, she went ahead and did the Zoom classes as much as she had to, but it's difficult. It's more difficult because obviously you can't be there. It's even tougher to keep kids' attention, and it's tough for any teacher to keep kids' attention for all the time that he or she needs. But then to suggest that this is a repair day, basically, they needed to counteract the fatigue that the staff is experiencing, and that the four-day weekend may offer physical, mental, and emotional restoration, which really is a sad statement about the state of schooling. There's also this piece, which is extremely revealing. It's in the Los Angeles Times, so it emphasizes the Southern California area, California generally. And headline, faced with soaring D's and F's, schools are ditching the old way of grading. And it says that there's a high school teacher named Joshua Moreno that they give a spotlight to, that a few years ago, he got fed up with his grading system, which had become a points game. And these days, the Alhambra High School English teacher has done away with points entirely. He no longer gives students homework. I'm sure that's makes it. And the by the way, the reason for it that he explains is that many of the students live in environments where they'd have no chance to do homework because the home life is too dysfunctional. Which, by the way, you understand that. And teachers who try to explain why certain poorly performing schools, no matter how much money the government throws at those schools, they tend to continue performing poorly. And the teacher's explanation generally is that's because the home environment is so dysfunctional. And I understand that there are home environments where, yes, kids can get support and space and encouragement for doing home assignments, and other families where it's just hard to even conceive it because the homes are a mess, basically. And with all kinds of emotional and financial and other challenges that not everybody experiences. But he no longer gives students homework. He gives them multiple opportunities to improve essays and classwork. The goal is to base grades on what students are learning and to remove behavior, deadlines, and how much work they do from the equation. And part of what the motivation here is there has been a great deal of research that shows, despite very expensive government programs and school district programs everywhere, there are profound differences in academic performance. And the differences are not just according to wealth or the level of education of your parents. They're racial. And that, of course, is unacceptable, should be unacceptable. But one of the things that is very clear here reading this article is these racial differences that they're now trying to address are not because the teachers or the administrators or the school district itself is afflicted, as a critical race theory would have it, by structural, endemic, inbred racism. It has to do with differences that are more fundamental and also closer to the surface. It says the changes Moreno has embraced are part of a growing trend in which educators are moving away from traditional point-driven grading systems, aiming to close large academic gaps among racial, ethnic, and economic groups. The trend was accelerated by the pandemic and school closures that caused troubling increases in D's and F's across the country, and by calls to examine the role of institutionalized racism in schools in the aftermath of the murder of George Floyd by a police officer. Now, are they implying here in the Los Angeles Times that the murder of George Floyd created academic gaps, or just basically imposed it, exposed it? It's teaching students that failure is part of learning, they say in the Los Angeles and San Diego Unified School Districts, the two largest school districts with some 660,000 students combined, have recently directed teachers to base academic grades on whether the students have learned what was expected of them during a course, and to not penalize them for behavior, for work habits, or for missed deadlines. The policies encourage teachers to give students opportunities to revise essays or retake tests to show that they have met learning goals, rather than enforcing hard deadlines. If this actually allows the students to fare better when they get out of school and they go on to further education or they enter the workplace, well, that would be interesting to see how this is going to work out. I would be very skeptical of it. But the idea that you can simply continue moving in this direction and taking away any penalty in terms of grading because you don't turn in on homework or because you're disruptive in the classroom, that's the real difficulty here. Is a lot of this has to do with what they're saying. People find their grading suffers when they're put on detention or they're taken out of class or there's some kind of consequence for misbehavior. If that doesn't have a consequence or relationship to your grading and how you're performing, then what is happening to the kids who do focus on that? Coming up, we're going to be speaking about another problem, a system directly related to veterans on Veterans Day, a system of veterans care that leaves thousands of homeless vets. We'll be talking to Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg coming up. It's a real pleasure and an honor to welcome to our show Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, who is the co-chair of the Center for American Security. With Veterans Day today, there are so many issues regarding our vets. He's also General Kellogg, former National Security Advisor to Vice President Pence, who's been very much appreciated on the times that he's appeared on this show and his service as well. General Kellogg, there's a piece today that is very striking. It's gotten a lot of conversation already in Newsweek. And the headline is 37,000 U.S. veterans are homeless. I was one of them. And it describes his experiences after 4 years in the Army. This is a painful problem, along with the suicides and the mental illness and the depression. What do you think it reflects that we seem to go through this and confront it almost every Veterans Day?
Michael, first, thanks for having me on the show today. What it really screams out at everybody is a lack of connection once they leave the military with society in general. And it's almost like a feeling of hopelessness. They're out there. They haven't made that connection. And the biggest one, besides the homelessness, that one I've been very concerned about, is the growing rate of suicides out there. You know, we've got it grows much larger. It's almost 2 to 3 times larger percentage-wise than the general population. And we, you know, we passed a law in 2015 called the Clay Hunt Veterans Suicide Prevention Act, which is the intent to reach out and get these people connected to the Veterans Affairs or with some ability to talk to them. And the same with homelessness is when they go out there, they're actually, it's a cry for help. And because they feel so disconnected once they leave the military. Part of that is, Michael, it's a little bit psychological. You know, when you're in the military, you've got this fraternity, this brotherhood or sisterhood of being there where you're with a team and you're always working as a team. And then when you leave the military, you don't find that. And then you kind of get disconnected with society. It's sort of like basically a cry for help is what it turns out. And it's really... it's disappointing. It's something which I think the Veterans Affairs needs to really look at real hard, both that and suicide, because it does affect a growing population of the veteran community. As I said a minute ago, percentage-wise, proportionally, it's greater than the average population.
Do you think that part of that has to do with the fact that we went to an all-volunteer army, that it used to be much more common for people to have military service because it was considered that was normal? Elvis Presley allowed himself to be drafted, which I remember was a very big thing when I was a kid. And today, it's a decided minority of both men and women who actually go into the military. So does that increase, you think, the disconnection that you're talking about?
Yeah, Michael, you're right on it. You nailed that one. The answer is yeah, because when the people leave the military, it's a very, very small percentage. There's less than 1% of the American population serves in the military, and it's, you know, there's only 17 million veterans when we talk about that on Veteran Day today. So they come out, and there's no ability to connect with people that they've that understand what they have been through. I mean, a lot of them have been through some pretty tough situations, be it Iraq or Afghanistan or deployed. What they go through in the military, sometimes it's, you know, they leave their families behind, they miss Christmases, they miss New Year's, they miss family birthdays. And there's a sense of disconnect with society in general. And the society doesn't really understand that, I believe, is because they don't have this commonality of interest or connection. So I think you're right on that, and I think people need to be aware of that. I think because it's such a small, it's a large percentage of veterans, but a lot of people just, they don't connect that with the larger problems that you see out there, and they just go, oh, okay, well, you got a bunch of homeless people out there. Now, the veterans should be treated, to me, a little bit differently. They've actually sacrificed a lot. They've carried the colors of America forward. They've given great sacrifice, and I think people need to recognize that, and I just think there's this disconnect because people don't really understand the military veteran. And it's not, you know, Michael, I don't think it's necessarily deliberate. I just think it's by omission, not by commission, that they ignore them.
Well, this gets to the heart of something that has changed in America, not for the better. I remember when my dad, may he rest in peace, met my wife's dad, father, and they were both veterans of World War II, and they had an immediate connection, Army and Navy. My father-in-law was a major in the Army, and they had something to talk about. It was an initial connection and common experience, and obviously that's so much more rare today. There are a number of people and politicians on both sides, Republicans and Democrats, who have talked about at least expanding, if not requiring, some form of national service to try to give back that connection, which is a real problem in America today. Your reaction?
Yeah, I think it, honestly, Michael, I think it actually probably goes deeper than that. And what I mean by that is I think when you think, especially today on Veterans Day, you know, these are people that, really, the veterans, they upheld the oath of loyalty to the American people, and they lived it. You know, they kept the barbarians from the gate in the darkest and longest of nights, and they fought far from home. And most veterans, they ride around silently. They're on a bus or a subway next to you. They shop in the same store, and you probably wouldn't know it. And I think Americans need to kind of reach out and become more attuned to the veterans that are, out there. I'm reminded of what Reagan said, freedom is never more than one generation from extinction. And I think veterans kind of exemplify what it is to be an American. And so I've urged a lot of veterans to get involved and not sit idly by, because they bring credibility. They've been in the arena of service. Some have sacrificed greatly for this nation. But despite that, knowing the cost, veterans believe that the cost of their service was just. And we need our volunteers out there as volunteers or teachers and advocates. And a lot of them have been pressing, look, go into the teaching ranks. Be very advocate. Advocate to the people out there, because some of them just don't realize what the role of the veteran is, because they've never had to do it. So I think we just need to get veterans more involved. A lot of them are running for office. I kind of grant it that we're not a perfect nation, but in each one's service as a veteran, there were moments of perfect recognition that our nation and our people are worth fighting for and dying for. And those ideals need to be pushed forward to the American people. And I think veterans need to advocate for that. So I think the veterans need to get out there and push more than just being a silent rider on a subway or a train or in your church. Be advocates for America. And I think that's where they need to be, and I think we should push that.
Well, you're one veteran who has definitely been advocating for America and serving your country. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, who is the co-chair of the Center for American Security. And, General, I hope you'll come back later, because one of the things that we didn't get to, but I think is part of this, is a part of it is media portrayal. There is so much emphasis on homeless vets and troubled vets as if these are not heroic people. They are victims. And God forbid we should have a military that we look upon as heroes and public servants and victors rather than victims. I thank you for your service and for your service to the cause of veterans and the challenges that we face right now, at one of many challenges involving national unity and trying to bring our country together. I appreciate your joining us. Coming up, there's a you talk about Americans splitting apart over all kinds of things. There is actually a prominent public figure who, just in a very well-intentioned veterans statement, used a term that you're not supposed to use in public anymore. It's the term Negro. And who said it? Well, you'll hear, and then you'll be amazed at the public reaction. Coming up on The MedVet Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, it is Veterans Day, and a time to think about literally the millions upon millions of people who, over the years, over our various wars and conflicts and defenses of the country, have risked their lives, devoted their lives. Of course, officially, the difference between Veterans Day and Memorial Day is Memorial Day is supposed to honor the people that we lost. That was established right after the Civil War with the almost unimaginable levels of slaughter that were experienced by Americans. If you count both Union and Confederacy, and they're all Americans who died in that war, it would be the equivalent it would be the equivalent today of like 7 million people being killed. So 700,000 at the time, and the population was, national population was over 32 million. So it's an unbelievable situation. But one of the things that it's also very striking is they were celebrating, and you probably heard something about this in the media, the 100th anniversary of the Tomb of the Unknowns, and the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, which was established exactly 100 years ago today. And what's fascinating is they have recordings and they have film of President Harding talking about the sincere hope. And literally, it was hope that went on for 5 years after that observance, after President Harding died. He died in a hotel room. They still don't know exactly what it was. And, of course, there are conspiracy theories about it, but they don't have any validity. But what President Harding was talking about was the hope that there would be no more war. It was the war to end wars. They had set up the League of Nations to replace nations ever having to fight against one another. And which is why it is so remarkable when you think about it that a mere 20 years after that time, the honoring and establishing the Tomb of the Unknowns in 1921, what you're talking about is 20 years later, Pearl Harbor, and even more killing and sacrifice, and yes, heroism. President Biden gave a Veterans Day remarks. He gave a Veterans Day ceremony, and there's a detail of the speech which has gotten a great deal of publicity. And it is fascinating because it indicates, I think, more evidence of the way that where you situate yourself politically will often determine the kind of response you get for things that you say in public. Here is President Biden, part of his speech today on the Veterans Day ceremony. This is clip two.
You know, I've adopted the attitude of the great Negro at the time, pitcher in the Negro Leagues, went on to become a great pitcher in the pros, into the Major League Baseball after Jackie Robinson. His name was Satchel Paige.
Okay. First of all, the idea that he's distinguishing between the Negro Leagues and the pros, but the fact that he first said, I'm going to adopt the attitude of the great Negro. Can you imagine? I don't know. You don't even have to ask about Trump. Remember Dan Quayle when he was a vice president of the United States? I mean, the attacks almost daily on Vice President Quayle over nothing. I mean, and remember he had misspelled the word, and he was visiting a classroom and he had corrected somebody who was writing on the board and he had corrected them wrong for not putting an E on potato. And that was, he never forgot it. He never lived that down. And today, I think it's unacceptable to, and you feel for President Biden because he's obviously reaching for words and he's wandering off the text of his speech, which I am sure that his advisors and staff want to make sure that he sort of curbs that enthusiasm. But don't you suspect that if this were not a Democratic president who did receive overwhelming black support in the last election, that referring to Negro League, sure, that's a historic term. But referring to Satchel Paige as a great Negro, this is not to say that he wasn't. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. It's also going to be tough because of inflation, which has just officially reached a 30-year high. This is the way that's covered on CBS News. Listen. Clip six.
The rough road to recovery for America's economy. Inflation, which essentially means high costs and lower buying power, continued to surge last month, with prices rising at the fastest pace in more than 30 years. It comes as companies struggle with a logjam supply chain and a nationwide labor shortage. The Labor Department's Consumer Price Index jumped more than 6% in October from last year. It was the fifth straight month in which inflation surged more than 5% year over year. Americans are are now paying more for shelter, food, fuel, medical care, cars and trucks, and many other goods and services.
Heading into the holiday season, Americans are getting squeezed. Drivers now face gas prices nearly 50% higher than last year, roughly $1.30 more per gallon. It's not just the gas. New car prices are up over 9%, used cars 26%. And in the grocery store, prices for meats, poultry, fish, and eggs have risen more than 11%.
It is a confluence of bad timing. We have enormous problems with our supply chain. And when you put rising demand and constrained supply together, you get inflation at a pace that we have not seen in three decades.
That's extraordinary. And one of the things that, again, I think that Americans everywhere are thinking, what can the government do about it? What can they possibly do? Or are we sort of locked into sort of a spiral of damage and devastation that might recall the late 1970s when inflation went up from over 6% to at some points close to 20%. It was awful. And again, the impact, unless this gets turned around, could be very profound. And it's one of those things. Is one thing that I think that the leaders of all parties should begin to promise would be to basically do a damage assessment of any new government policy, of any new spending policy or taxing policy. What will the impact be on inflation? We have been ignoring this for a very long time. It's generally considered that the more you spend and the more you dig a hole for yourself. And by the way, supposedly they're celebrating in Washington right now because the deficit for the month of October just concluded. The spending deficit is much less in October of 2021 compared to October of 2020. Why? Well, because we were still giving out all of those rescue packages to deal with the pandemic. Now we supposedly have survived the pandemic, and yet the inflation is a problem that every American feels. You know that when you talk to people about just stuff in general and what your plans are and vacations and Thanksgiving and all of that. And the fact that inflation is going to be a factor at every Thanksgiving table means that it is necessary for Republicans as well as Democrats to actually address this issue and to try to address it in a more constructive manner. There's also an issue where you talk about too much government spending, where we've done too little government spending, and that has to do with protecting ourselves against some increasingly serious threats from China. One of the fascinating stories that has occurred is that apparently the United States is working with Israel to try to mobilize that Iron Dome system to protect us against potential Chinese missiles. Is that promising? We'll be talking to defense analyst Arthur Herman, who's a director of the Quantum Alliance Initiative at Hudson Institute, about new approaches to national security on this Veterans Day in this greatest nation on God's green earth.